welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 categories smart. This is Jesse Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Salt, Sugar, Fat, by Michael Moss, and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. If nothing else, this book is intended as a wake-up call to the issue and tactics at play in the food industry, to the fact that we are not helpless in facing them down. We have choices, particularly when it comes to grocery shopping, and I saw this book on its most basic level as a tool for defending ourselves when we walk through the doors. Salt, Sugar, Fat gives us a fascinating inside look of how the food industry has evolved to increasingly rely on salt, sugar, and fat in the development of processed foods. This eye-opening book will help you see what you're up against in your quest to stay healthy. Michael Moss is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter who went behind the scenes into food labs, food companies, and in conversations with industry executives to get the scoop on the prevalence of salt, sugar, and fat in our foods and beverages, and why we just can't seem to resist them. In this Life Note, we'll review several big thoughts, including irresistible sugar, from Coke to carrots, more cheese please, the price of convenience, addicted to salt, and salt in our food. Let's start with the first big thought, irresistible sugar. We're hardwired for sweets. Quote, a whole body of research has been undertaken to link sugar with compulsive eating. In Florida, researchers have conditioned rats to expect an electrical shock when they eat cheesecake, and still they lunge for it. End quote. Just like those rats lunging for the cheesecake, humans are also lunging for sugar-laden foods in epic proportions. On average, Americans eat 22 teaspoons of sugar per day, taking into account the sugar that's included in the processed foods and beverages we consume. Consider that for a moment. 22 teaspoons of sugar per person per day. That's 88 grams of sugar. Our body can only healthily metabolize about 25 grams per day. That's an excess waste of over 60 grams of sugar that's clogging up our body systems. Yikes. Michael Moss writes, quote, the first thing to know about sugar is this, our bodies are hardwired for sweets, end quote. He then helps us to further understand why it's so hard for us to resist all the goodies that food companies create. These companies have been increasingly sophisticated in figuring out exactly how much sweetness is just right to get us to buy more of their products. In fact, there's something called the bliss point, which he explains is the exact amount of sweetness that we prefer for our food and drinks. So when you can't seem to put down that package of cookies, you've got to understand that you're a bit like David fighting Goliath, and Goliath unfortunately knows your bliss point. It's certainly hard to fight an army of food scientists and marketers who came up with the perfect bliss point for that chocolate chip cookie you're trying so hard not to eat. When you read Salt, Sugar, Fat, you'll realize just how much you need to shore up your own defenses if you want to reduce sugar consumption. And it's not just in the obvious products like cookies and ice cream. Sugar creeps into just about every food you see on the shelf. Whether it's bread, crackers, or even tomato sauce, sugar is often one of the most prevalent ingredients in modern food products. Most people have no idea just how pervasive it is. Yet, if we're eating an average of 22 teaspoons of sugar per person per day, it must be coming from somewhere. If you're working on cutting down the amount of sugar that you eat, you'll really want to pay close attention to all of that added sugar hiding in your food. You'll need to become a bit of a food detective and definitely try to take your own sweetness bliss point down a notch or two. From Coke to Carrots, one Coke executive's story. Quote, in nutrition circles, where the causes of obesity are discussed, there is no single product among the 60,000 items sold in the grocery store that is considered more evil, more directly responsible for the crisis than soda. The problem, as growing numbers of nutritionists see it, is not the calories in soda, though calories are ultimately what causes us to gain weight. Rather, it's their form. Research suggests that our bodies are less aware of excessive intake when the calories are liquid. End quote. Sugar is ubiquitous in beverages, whether it comes from your soda or even that fruit juice that sounds healthy but is really so loaded with sugar that you may as well just have a donut instead. If you think you're feeling wary about drinking sweets and sodas, imagine if you were a soda executive and felt this way. Jeffrey Dunn, a senior executive at Coke who eventually left the company, increasingly changed his views towards whether consumers should really be buying his own product. A turning point came for him when he read a book called Sugar Busters, which placed a good deal of blame on the soda industry for the dramatic rise in obesity. The following year, when Jeffrey was touring an impoverished neighborhood in Brazil, a prime target area for the soda company, quote, he had an epiphany. A voice in my head says, these people need a lot of things, but they don't need a Coke. I almost threw up. From that moment forward, the fun came out of it for me, end quote. Eventually, Jeffrey left the company, and he ended up turning his skills towards marketing carrots instead, and told the author that he was doing penance for his years at Coca-Cola. Whether you consider soda to be evil, or simply a treat that you may want to drink in moderation, is up to you. But the point is, if you're not careful, you can consume a lot of extra calories and sugar in liquid form, along with a plethora of other toxic chemicals. More cheese, please. Dairy stockpiles and subsidies. Quote, cheese has become the single largest source of saturated fat in the American diet, although it's hardly the only culprit. Day in and day out, Americans on average are exceeding the recommended maximum of fat by more than 50%. End quote. It's unlikely that you spend a lot of time thinking about government subsidies and the role they play in your own health, but perhaps you should. There's a very interesting section of the Salt, Sugar, Fat book that gives us a look at how our own government props up the dairy industry and the resulting impact on our fat consumption. Michael Moss explains how the dairy industry was facing a major hurdle when consumption of high-fat milk began to decline. Consumers were beginning to switch to low-fat milk when trying to watch their weight. As a result, the dairy industry, quote, was suddenly drowning in surplus whole milk, as well as the fat that was being taken out of whole milk to make the skim, end quote. However, rather than have to deal with the normal forces of supply and demand, the dairy industry simply began to rely on the government to bail them out. The government subsidized not just the milk, but also the milk fat, which was then turned into cheese. In fact, by 1981, the dairy industry had so much excess cheese, together with surplus milk and butter, that it was costing taxpayers $4 billion per year to store all of it. Yes, the government was propping up the dairy industry to the tune of $4 billion per year, not $4 million, but $4 billion. And over time, consumers ate more and more cheese. And not just plain cheese, but cheese as an ingredient. Cheese galore, cheese pizza, cheeseburgers, macaroni and cheese, and even cheese in vegetables. You find it everywhere. You probably thought you just had your own willpower to contend with, but no, you also have food scientists, food marketers, and the U.S. government helping out the dairy industry, all working hard and spending your own tax dollars trying to get you to eat even more cheese. The particularly interesting aspect of this story about the dairy industry subsidies is that it shines a clear light on how government influences can significantly influence your own consumption. The author does a great job uncovering this in Salt, Sugar, Fat, and you'll no doubt find it to be truly enlightening. The price of convenience. The prepackaged lunch story. Quote, the group called the Cancer Project that examined the prepackaged Lunchables type meals sized up nearly 60 ready-to-eat meals sold by grocery stores and found a nightmarish mix of salt, sugar, and fat in nearly all of them. End quote. Everyone seems to be time-starved these days, and parents can have a particularly challenging time, rushing to get their kids off to school, including making their lunch, while they rush to get themselves ready for work. Into this scenario, Lunchables was created, a convenient pre-packaged lunch for kids that targeted busy mothers and working women, according to author Michael Moss's research. Lunchables, which came with meat, typically bologna or ham, processed cheese and crackers packaged in a convenient tray proved to be a winner with those consumers seeking that convenient solution in the midst of their hectic lives. Quote, annual sales kept climbing, past $500 million, past $800 million. At last count, it was close to $1 billion, end quote. The growth of these products and the convenient trays from other manufacturers sounds like a great success story. So what could be wrong here? As Michael emphasizes, quote, convenience, of course, does have a price. Loads of salt, sugar, and fat are used not only to boost the allure of the foods, they are needed to make them safe for eating weeks or even months after they were manufactured, end quote. He goes on to explain how an advocacy group took a closer look at the impact of the growth of fast foods within grocery stores and found that not only was childhood obesity increasing, but diabetes among children was also becoming an increasing problem. In fact, he writes that nearly one out of every four American adolescents either already has type 2 diabetes or might be close to developing it. Not to mention the crazy increase in food allergies and sensitivities. So while there are certainly benefits to having more convenient foods, we also must keep in mind that there can also be a price associated with that convenience, a big price. It's up to you as a consumer to really consider what you're eating and what you're feeding your kids on a regular basis. What price are you willing to pay? Addicted to salt. No tin-tasting bread for me. Quote, the blood gets especially besieged when processed food is ingested, flooding the system with its heavy loads of salt, sugar, and fat. But where the links between eating and drugs get really interesting is in the brain. There, narcotics and food, especially food that is high in salt, sugar, and fat, act much alike. Once ingested, they race along the same pathways, using the same neurological circuitry to reach the brain's pleasure zones, those areas that reward us with enjoyable feelings for doing the right things by our bodies, end quote. Yes, just like sugar and fat, we absolutely love salt. In one 2008 study, researchers concluded that salt was similar to sex, voluntary exercise, fats, carbohydrates, and chocolate in its possessing addictive qualities. So whether you're addicted to it or just plain enjoy it, salt is easily found. Whether it's perfectly seasoning your French fries or making your soup tastier, you'll find plenty of salt in your foods these days. We'll explore more of that topic in the next section. The author tells us about his own inside experience tasting products without salt as part of his research for this book. He visited a major supplier of salt and one of the company's technicians baked some loaves of bread without the salt. Michael's description of his experience was this, quote, we ate, we gagged. The bread tasted like tin. Without salt, it didn't even look like the puffy, light bread you buy in the grocery store, end quote. He realized that bread without salt just really wasn't going to be all that edible. It's hard to give up the improved taste quality that salt adds to foods. But there is some good news, according to Michael, which is that, quote, there's hope when it comes to salt. Addiction to salt, it turns out, can be readily reversed. All that is needed is to stop eating processed foods for a while, end quote. That's easier said than done, however. Let's now take a look at how manufacturers rely on salt in those foods. Salt in our food. It's everywhere. Quote, the flavor that salt imparts to food is just one of the attributes that manufacturers rely on. For them, salt is nothing less than a miracle worker in processed foods, end quote. As if it wasn't hard enough to resist the sugar and fat in our foods, we now have to defend against vast amounts of salt as well, or more specifically, sodium. In the book Salt, Sugar, Fat, we learn that the culprit is not really the salt shaker, but rather the added salt found in processed foods. One important study, published by the Journal of the American College of Nutrition in 1991, showed that over 3/4 of the salt the participants consumed actually came from the processed foods they were eating. Michael writes, quote, the companies making these products weren't just adding salt. They were dumping sack after sack of it into their boxed macaroni and cheese, their chicken a la king heat and serve meals, their canned spaghetti and meatballs, their salad dressings, tomato sauces, pizzas, and soups, end quote. So why are manufacturers using so much salt? Besides the fact that it tastes good to consumers and helps those manufacturers sell more of their products, it also turns out that in the world of processed foods, salt is the great fixer. Without added salt, for example, crackers are bitter and soggy, and cornflakes taste metallic. Meat gets a warmed-over flavor without salt and can taste nasty. Salt also delays spoilage. The list of fixes that salt has for food goes on and on. The point is, it's hard to escape all of this added salt in our food. As consumers, we have to be very diligent about reading labels on packaging and carefully considering what we eat. The more processed food you eat, the more diligent you need to be, given its pervasiveness. The fantastic news is, you are in control of what you eat. The more educated you become, the more you can make the best choices for yourself. You are ultimately your own best health advocate. You will no doubt be much better educated by the time you finish this engaging and highly recommended book, and you'll very likely have some great new strategies to incorporate into your own life book. So there we have it, Michael Moss's fascinating look inside the food industry's increasing reliance on salt, sugar, and fat in the development of processed foods, and what you can do to protect your health. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.